Did you go to Diaz in that particular situation?
Yeah, it was once I got Diaz hot in the eighth, I felt he was the right spot there. You know, he's our closer. He's our guy. I've been saying it. For us to get to where we want to get, we're going to need him. And today, obviously, weak ground ball got through, but then he got the job done in the ninth. So he's our guy, and that's why I went with it.
A kind of redemption there in the ninth inning after coming in the eighth and get to put him away in the ninth.
As soon as I saw the guys battle that ninth inning, I knew they told me as soon as the eighth done, if we tie it, we take the lead, you're coming back out. And those guys battled in the ninth inning. So I told myself, we got to get the W. We got to get the W anyways. And that's what I did, make pitches and get weak contacts.
Is it difficult at all to get warm again after a long wait between your innings?
I don't think so, because it's hot here, so I was like kind of hot in the dugout. You know, it was hot, I was walking a little bit, stretching my legs, doing like something to be ready when the inning was over. As soon as I started warm up, I was feeling good, I just made pitches.
After the last out, you pointed at the dugout in your excitement. Who were you pointing at?
To everyone, because it was a big win, you know. I fell down in the 8-1, and then this guy battled. They get Chapman, and I was celebrating with them, you know, just let them know, like, we got the W.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, July the 7th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram at Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to welcome in the good folks of the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. Hope you've had a great 4th of July long holiday weekend. What better way to put a cap on your weekend than with this show, a great Mets victory, a wraparound game tomorrow, business person special, they used to call them back in the day. I don't even know what they call them now. Are you allowed even to say business person special? I don't know, but a business person special, we'll call it that, here at the Talking Mets podcast. And the Mets have guaranteed themselves a 500 road trip and maybe get a little greedy going into the final game of the series with Christian Scott on the mound. But a lot to talk about here in this show. Later on, I'm going to get into a big idea. Once in a while, we come up with big ideas here on this show. Very often, they don't come to fruition, and they usually elicit good conversation, but we always like to do it in a responsible way. Look, this is talk radio. The genesis of this is radio, even though it's a podcast and it's not live, but the thesis is all about talk radio, and part of talk radio is putting a big idea out there, talking about it, trying to make it sound plausible, and then getting a reaction. We're going to do that in the back half of the show as I try to play GM and play David Stearns and maybe do an impactful move that may elicit a little bit of pain, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But where I want to start out is throughout a baseball season, there are certain points where you got to get the job done. If you're going to, even if you don't win a championship, if you're going to make the playoffs, if you're going to do something significant, if you're going to be in the conversation in October, there are different points of the season that have to come up in the positive for a club. And yeah, there are stretches. You go back and evaluate the Mets over an X period of time and say, well, that's when they made their bones. That's when the season was saved. That's when they pulled away. We know that. But within those stretches, there are games that just are defining. And the Mets have had a couple of those leading up to today. A lot like to point to the J.D. Martinez walk-off a couple of weeks back when the whole Grimace thing started. You could talk about that. I talked about, and we talked about, it was ironically about a week or so before the suspension, the Edwin Diaz save against the Padres on that Friday night, the importance of what 100 miles an hour and how he performed that night, what that meant for this club. And we've been talking about all the way back to when he crumpled on that mound in Miami during WBC, the importance of Edwin Diaz. And when Carlos Mendoza called for him in the eighth inning, I did see some second guessing over the social media airwaves, so to speak, and how, well, Mendoza just pulled his best reliever in Daniel Nunez for Diaz, and I saw everybody up in arms, and I'm laughing at myself. I'm like, the guy's making $20 million a year for exactly this spot. When the Mets, and there are certain times, and you saw it with how Buck Showalter used him back in 2022, there are certain times where they're going to go to Diaz in the eighth inning when they know they need a big out. And in theory, and I don't think it's a big stretch, he has the best stuff on this staff. He's the guy that if you needed to get one out, and the Mets' lives depended on it, there was one out to get one pitcher on the entire staff. You know, maybe when DeGrom was around, you'd say DeGrom. But now that he's not here and Scherzer's not here and the starting rotation is a nice rotation, but you don't have any top end one or twos in that rotation, the guy is Diaz. And when he gave up the walk and the hit, and I know Mendoza called it a little ground ball single, and I sat there and I saw the Pirates take the lead in a game where the Mets were again trying to get back to 500, were trying to solidify this road trip and give themselves a little bit of breathing room into the final game of the series on Monday. I just said to myself, you know, all the goodwill of this summer, the OMG, the grimace, the JD Martinez team meeting, the emergence of some of the guys, the Christian Scotts, Jose Buto, Mark Vientos, Alvarez, the turnaround by some of the value signings, the Harrison Baders of the world, how Brandon Nimmo has emerged as a run, you know, an RBI guy now, not even run creator, RBI guy. Lindor's turnaround. Yeah, I know he got snubbed for the All-Star game, but who cares about the All-Star accolades? That's more of an individual thing. You know, everything that positive, especially since the calendar turned to June 1st, after that horrible May, could all be undone by one man. And one man who I think still, I'll go back to, I had that emergency show, or was it just the regular show? I don't think it was emergency show, when he got suspended. Yeah, because that was a Sunday night, so it was a regular show. And I still call BS on that, but they were able to survive. They really only lost one game because of the lack of Diaz during that period. The bridge has been so bad that the games they lost were way before a Diaz entrance would happen. But I kept going back and you kept thinking about all the way back to when this guy was acquired. From the day this guy was acquired, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, you know, the day this guy was acquired in 2019 for Kelnick, And the crying and the railing and the ranting, and how he single-handedly destroyed the 2019 season. There's no doubt. I mean, go back and look. I'm not going to throw specific days or games or numbers, but you go back and look. His inability to be an adequate closer, he was historically bad. With all that great stuff in 2019, he kept the Mets out of the postseason. There were other reasons, but he was the reason. A competent Diaz would have gotten the Mets to the postseason. And then you look at, and forget about the COVID season, you look at 2021, he started to get a groove going, started to show you who he could be, blows a couple of games against the lowly Pirates in the middle of the summer, and then just when the Mets are trying to push into September, he blows a couple of games against the Nats around Labor Day, and the Mets don't make the postseason again in 2021. They flop down the stretch. Now, the Diaz didn't single-handedly do that, but he played a big part. Anytime there was momentum, anytime there was good feelings, he reared his bad side. And then 2022, the summer of Diaz love, and how Timmy Trumpets and everything, and we've talked about this, and how he defined that team. And he's not just the entrance music and his persona, how dominant he is. He became almost the fabric of this team. It was that elite ninth inning hanging over the head of the opposition. The feeling of game over that gave the Mets throughout the 26-man roster this air of invincibility. And then losing that last year, it really, in my opinion, took so much of the air out of the 2023 balloon. I'm not saying they wouldn't have gone out and been bad like they were, and the starting rotation would be injured and bad, and you still would have Vogelbach doing Vogelbach things and so on and so forth, but it set a negative tone. And his return in spring training, think about how big it was for the organization. And then you bring him into May, and we were all concerned about him in April. I'm like, all right. And he blows those four games, gets demoted out of the closer role. And just when he was getting himself back, this whole sticky stuff thing happens. But in the end, and this is, we'll take this one out today because it was a blown save, but the Mets came back and win. Mets missed the postseason by a game or two. Those games are going to be pointed to. I mean, right now, the Diaz that we knew from 2022, the Mets would be, you know, 48-40 in a pretty darn good place up there at the top of the wild card heap. But that's not reality. But I will say this. If there was ever a time where Diaz needed to be good, needed to show you that he was still, that guy was still in there, that we weren't witnessing, because at the end of the eighth inning, I was saying to myself, I think 2019 Diaz is back. I don't know if he's going to get put back, that genie's going to get put back in the bottle at least this year. Now, you're stuck with him, just like with Lindor. You could all get mad. You could all rail and rant and rave and all this other nonsense. You're stuck with that contract. And he unless this goes crazy bad, Mel Rojas bad. I used that term on the last Beyond the Mic post yesterday when I wrote a little bit about the Diaz suspension. And if you don't know Mel Rojas, just go to the 1998 Mets and look up Mel Rojas and you'll see what I mean. I'm sure that there are many in the audience that don't know or may not, were not born when Rojas was doing Rojas things. But that's another story for another day. And I said, this guy is going all Mel Rojas on us, kind of like Diekman. No, Diekman's more Mel Rojas, but he's going all in here on breaking everyone's hearts. And then not only does this team show, and I know that Chapman, they rubbed him down to the nub by managing his pitches. Even when they were making outs, they were trying to get him to throw as many pitches and work him as possible. Tough at-bats by Alvarez. Tough at-bat by Bader. Tough at-bat, I mean, really tough at-bat by Iglesias. What a winning ball player. I mean, goes back to what I said last week. You just can't always, and this is for me as well as everybody else, sometimes Baseball Reference and Fangraphs and Baseball Savant don't show you the whole story. You got to watch these games. You got to watch these players to truly understand what's going on. But when the Mets took the lead and when Diaz came back out, because I kept hearing Gary Cohen say, oh, Ottavino this, Ottavino that. No, this is what you pay $20 million a year for. Oh, he's been sitting for 28 minutes. I don't care. This is what you pay $20 million a year for. This is what get you, at least for a period of time, into the conversation that you're Goose, that you're Rivera, that you're Hoffman, even though I don't think Hoffman's a Hall of Famer, that heck, you're Billy Wagner at Billy Wagner's height. That you're one of those guys, because in 2022, you were. You were. You were as good as Chapman was when he was winning a championship with the Cubs in 2016. And that's what you're paid for. And whether the struggles are sticky stuff or lack thereof, pitch clock, trying to feel his way back from the knee injury. Probably, very likely, part of it is because of living up to the expectation, the pressure of the contract. Whatever it is, he's going to have to figure it out. Because as he goes, as Diaz's emotions and performance go up and down and up and down, so does this team. It does not matter. And I know, look, over this road trip, you saw the Mets kind of come back down to earth. You weren't going to have the summer where it was going to be June the whole summer. The Mets had the best offensive month in team history. Insane. I said this last week. Better than 86, 87, 06, 07. A great offensive team. Just go think about some of the years. The Mets are not known for offense, but they've had some good offensive teams. And this team beat all those teams in the month of June. You weren't going to continue scoring over 6 runs a game. Not realistic. Not possible. And the blueprint never stopped. It was putting up a crooked number, averaging 5 runs a game, getting 6 innings out of your starters, hopefully, at least 5, and getting enough out of those 6 outs to 8 outs to get the ball to your closer, because your closer is the best or one of the best or arguably right there 1 and 1A with Hader on paper, even though he doesn't show up anywhere when you look at the top relievers in the game for 2024. But he is. Still has that resume. His whole career is not summarized in 60 days. But that's how this team is going to go. So the summer of OMG, the summer of Grimace, the good vibes and feelings, anything that we want to talk about, Iglesias, how, you know, he's been such a revelation, and how JD Martinez has shown how veterans, even when they hit their late 30s and are kind of expensive for what they are and could break down, they still have value in a club. Think about how big he's been, not just because he's one of the best hitters on the team still, JD Martinez. Statistically, he's right there with Alvarez as the best hitter in 2024. But how important he's been, well, I should say Vientos too, how important he's been for in the clubhouse. All of that won't matter if Edwin Diaz can't be Edwin Diaz. And when he came back out and he was able to get through, especially the way he came back to strike out Cruz, I said, that's the Edwin Diaz. That's $20 million a year. And then he got a couple of groundouts from the lefties. And I still don't think he's perfectly right. I don't think he's commanding his pitches, slider it in the same manner that he used to. Lefties are getting a good look at him, which is weird because he's been historically pretty good against lefties in his career. It's not like he's a guy that's struggled in that vein. I mean, in 2022, just to bring up real quick, left-handed pitching. I mean, lefties hit 101 against him in 2022. I mean, righties actually were more of a problem. I mean, lefties hit like pitchers against them. So clearly, he's not the same player. If you look at his stats against lefties, they're pounding him this year. But the fact that he was able to come back out, the fact that he was able to recalibrate, clear the mechanism, to quote Kevin Costner in For the Love of the Game, and get back out there and get that save, that took the Mets road trip and took the season, which was saved in June, but was it made in June? It was saved. Make no mistake, guys and gals. The Mets saved their season in June by wiping away May. Unfortunately, because May was so bad, June and the impact of June was mitigated a little bit. So now they've come back down to earth. They blow a couple of five-run leads, which you never want to do even once in a season, much less twice in a week. They get their closer back. They seem to have the bridge now, the eighth and ninth inning, in the games where they have the lead figured out with Nunez to Diaz. And I'm not joking. I think Nunez, I know he struggled a little bit today, but he got a big out against a tough hitter in Reynolds. This kind of, and this is, I'm going to go steal a 90s reference again. I'm going all 90s on you guys tonight. This could be their Rivera to Wetland. And I know it's sacrilegious to compare anybody, baseball sacrilegious, to compare anybody to Rivera. And I'm not saying Nunez is even Rivera 96, pre-closer Rivera. But the way the Yankees shorten their game, and Nunez is a guy that could go a couple of innings, there's a lot of similarities there. And I'll tell you why. Diaz, because he's sweaty this year, has got a lot of similarities to what Wetland was there in the ninth inning with the Yankees in 96. So you could always look at New York baseball, of baseball history, and always pull something out to get an idea of what you're looking at. And, you know, look, you know all the flaws that the Mets have. This road trip has shown them. Their starters don't go deep. If you push them like Mendoza did with Scott, which I have no problem with, pushing a starter, he hangs an off-speed pitch and it goes to the moon. I mean, that could happen when you throw strikes. The offense is good, but I think there are still guys that were just, you know, pushing themselves to their average. They regressed so much that they progressed to where they were, that they swung the other way. I mean, Harrison Bader's been incredible. I mean, this guy's playing himself. And our friend that is now a contributor to the show, David Mills, over at Beyond the Mic, wrote about it in his shortstops column. And I even wrote about a couple of weeks ago giving Bader a contract extension. This guy is a real component glue guy. I mean, he's a glue guy. He's like, you know, on an NBA team, you have those glue guys. He's becoming one of those guys. But even with that, you look up and down the lineup, and you still have guys that are learning the game. You have Vientos and Alvarez. They're accelerating the development, but they're still developing. Alonso's not having a great year. I know he's an all-star, the Mets' only all-star, but he's not having a great year. Thank God for Nimmo figuring out how to be an RBI guy now instead of a leadoff guy. I mean, Lindor has been every bit the MVP type of player. He should get down ballot votes if this continues. I mean, they're good, but they have flaws. They haven't been great defensively. And look, outside of Nunez, you don't know what you're going to get out of Garrett. You don't know what you're going to get. You're not going to get much out of Diekman these days. All right, Eric Worzy, good bullpen numbers down in Syracuse. Strikes a lot of guys out. Has this splitter. Great story. Overcame cancer a couple times. Thank you. Thank God for that. But who knows? Ottavino, ever since the pitch clock got put into play, you don't know what you're going to get there. He's a sweaty guy. And Hauser, did Jesse Winker bring him back down to earth? We'll see. You missed Drew Smith, even though I don't think he was as high leverage as people thought, but he was a good guy to get outs, you know, when the Mets were behind to keep them close, or even in the early innings, like a sixth inning or so. You know, you have all these scrap heap guys, none of which, and I know they brought this guy Gage over from the Dodgers, who used to be in the system, lefty. I mean, we'll eventually see him, but if he's bounced around, again, Houston, Dodgers, he's an analytics arm that shuttles up and down, and you hope to find gold somehow where the body, the talent, and the head all come together. We'll see. But you can't rely on this bridge 100%. That's where the work for Stearns at the deadline comes into play. But I'll tell you this. Before I take a break and I get to my big idea. If Diaz isn't Diaz, and I don't even want him. Look, getting 2022 Diaz is asking a lot. He's probably never going to be that good again. That's a career year. That's okay. But he's got to be a guy that could come out and be the version that you started to see in 2021 that could consistently get, and like, 4 blown saves for a closer in the month of May, that should be the whole season. That's it. Like, that's even a lot. You know, good closer, guys that want to be in that, you know, best closer, highly paid, 2. You're going to have a stub your toe. Josh Hader, great closer. Even there was a clip up recently. Mets beat him a couple of years back when he was with Milwaukee still. Jose Peraza hits a home run off him. You're always going to get a guy to take one off of you. Nobody's perfect. But he needs to be how Juris Familia used to be. We're not asking him to be, you know, all-time best, never blow a save. I hope he is. He has the potential with his stuff to be. But he's got to be more like that, Diaz. He can't be the Diaz of 2019. And if he is going to be the Diaz of 2019, every time this team gets on a roll, and when you put, and I always say this, when you, baseball is a game that is, you're only as good as your next day's pitcher. We know that. But when you blow a save, and when you work so hard to get a lead and get to the final 3 outs, and you can see the dugout, and you could see the post-game meal, and you could see the joy of what it means to win and feel good after a ball game right there in front of you, and it gets pulled away from you, and sometimes the most gut-wrenching, heart-wrenching way, which Diaz has done over his Mets tenure, I really think it takes a lot out of the team, more than just, oh, well, the next day pitcher will solve it. And that's why it is critically important for Diaz to be Diaz. A very good Diaz. I don't mean perfect Diaz, all-time best Diaz, all-time best season. We saw that. Maybe he does it again in his career, it comes close. I don't expect that. You know, Doc Gooden was on this show and talked about how he never was, even before he got hurt and the drugs and everything, Doc could never do 85 again. Just like Ron Guidry couldn't do 77 again. Or go, I mean, yeah, even Hall of Famers like Maddox. They had their career best years. Was it 95? He had like a 1.5 ERA. Didn't do that every time anymore. I mean, he's still very good. So I'm not expecting that, but he has to be Diaz. And if he's not, trade deadline's not going to solve that. Whatever's out there and available, whether it be an arm from Anaheim or Tampa or whatever, whatever reliever they could bring in that could maybe push Reed Garrett to the sixth inning, or take some of the pressure off of him, because I still think as the lights get bright, he doesn't execute. Even today, he's not throwing as many strikes. His splitter's not as enticing as it used to be, though we had a good one today to get a strikeout. But it won't matter whoever they bring in, because once it comes down to, you know, Mets are 17-10 in one-run games. That's 30% of their games decided by one run. That's a pretty good percentage of wins. And for you to do that, you have to have an elite closer. And they haven't had. Imagine if they had a good closer, how much better that percentage could be. They've done it mainly because they've been able to hit their way to that or stave off, in some cases, late rallies with just enough. They need Diaz. The suspension sucked. It was unfair. I still don't understand it. And if Diaz continues to do what he says he's going to do, which is the same thing he did that night in Chicago, you got to wonder how the hell we got here. We've had that conversation. But ultimately, it comes down to Diaz is going to hold the cards. He's going to decide if Grimace and OMG and all the fun that we had with this team in June is going to mean a hill of beans. And hey, in another 14 days, because the week coming up is critical. You want to say tomorrow's a little bit of a house money game. They've already clinched the 500 road trip. Tomorrow would really go far. Winning tomorrow, taking 3 out of 4 from the Pirates, who are not a great team, but with their pitching, they're in games too. They just don't have a lot of offense. That would be, especially after the disastrous loss in the third game. Actually, last two losses in Washington were disastrous. You could argue they should have swept them. But, you know, this could be a really good 5-3 road trip. It's not easy beating the Nats, even though they're a second division club. The Pirates are not an easy team. These are not easy teams to beat. When you're the Mets and you're staring at the margin of error that they're staring at, no team is easy. They could win tomorrow and make that a 5-3 road trip. That's significant. But even if they don't, they come back home a game under. Now you have a critical 6-game homestand, a homestand where minimum 4-2. Like anything less is just beyond the pale disappointing when you're facing a bad Colorado team. And I know Washington's plucky and they got, you know, Woods now, and they got their kids that are forming this core. But you want to make the postseason, you got to win at home. You got to win at home. And you got to beat teams at home. And you got to use Citi Field as some kind of home field advantage. Because the Padres and the Cardinals are starting to play, and I hear all about the Cardinals' run differentiation, but they're starting to play like teams that want to win about 88 games. And the Braves are still the Braves, and when it's all said and done, most people are going to bet they're going to be 90-plus. I don't know if the Mets can be 90-plus, but I think the Mets can be 85 to 88. And now you're starting to get into that situation where the Giants and Diamondbacks are kind of hanging in there. Like, you want to be clearly that next team or part of those three teams. And the only way you're going to do that is by getting on a run. And you can't get on a run when your closer comes in like he did today and gives up a walk and a hit to batters that, quite honestly, shouldn't be even touching him. I'm sorry. It's not like the Pirates, even with guys like Cruz. The only guy in that club that I saw up and down that lineup that should be giving Diaz a run for his money is Reynolds. And Nunez took care of him. I'm sorry. The rest, they should be blown away. Diaz on point. Rowdy Tellez's don't hit him. I don't even know, go up and down the lineup, who else was there today. But you get the point. You get the point. And that's really where we're at. And that's the whole ball game. Diaz is going to determine it, just like it's been since 2019. And I'm afraid to say throughout the rest of his contract, it's probably going to be a lot like that, the rest of his contract. As Diaz goes, so does the Mets' win streaks, so do the fans' emotion, so do how this team goes. But Nick Gonzalez and Rowdy Tellez, Joey Bart, whoever else, Palacios, all these other names I'm popping up here that I saw on the Pirates, they shouldn't be hitting him. I'm sorry. They should not be walking with him. His command and control is on. It should be lights out, game over. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When I come back, big idea. I have a big idea. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm wondering if the Mets can really go dynamic here. Not only bring in an arm that will help them back up Diaz as a closer, but create an even more elite bridge to Diaz with Nunez sliding to the seventh, getting Garrett out of there, this guy coming in the eighth, and then Diaz in the ninth, and then guess what? Tomorrow, when the Mets play, they're not going to have Nunez, they're not going to have Diaz, And it'd be nice if you had another closing option that, well, let's face it, is not Adam Ottavino, who's a bit of a magic eight ball these days. So let's take a quick break. I'll come back with a big idea to round out the show right after this.